Domesday Book, Cassette 12.
Chapter 22. Kivrin didn't get Agnes to bed till nearly dawn. The arrival of the three kings, as she continued to call them, had woken her completely, and she refused to even consider lying down for fear she might miss something, even though she was obviously exhausted. She tagged after Kivrin as she tried to help Eloise bring in the food for the feast, whining that she was hungry. And then when the tables were finally set and the feast began, refused to eat anything. Kivrin had no time to argue with her. There was course after course to be brought across the courtyard from the kitchen, trenchers of venison and roast pork, and an enormous pie Kivrin half expected blackbirds to fly out of when the crust was cut. According to the priest at Holy Reformed, fasting was observed between the midnight mass and the high mass Christmas morning, but everyone, including the bishop's envoy, ate heartily of the roast pheasant and goose and stewed rabbit in saffron gravy, and drank. The three kings called constantly for more wine. They had already had more than enough. The monk was leering at Masri, and the clerk, drunk when he arrived, was nearly under the table. The bishop's envoy was drinking more than either of them, beckoning constantly to Rosamond to bring him the wassail bowl, his gestures growing broader and less clear with every drink. Good, Kivrin thought. Perhaps he'll get so drunk, he'll forget he promised Lady Hermione he'd take me to the nunnery at Godstow. She took the bowl around to Garwin, hoping to have an opportunity to ask him where the drop was. But he was laughing with some of Sir Blowett's men, and they called to her for ale and more meat. By the time she got back to Agnes, the little girl was sound asleep, her head nearly in her manchet. Kivrin picked her up carefully and carried her upstairs to Rosamond's bower. Above them, the door opened. "Lady Catherine," Eloise said, her arms full of bedding. "I am grateful you are here. I have need of your help." Agnes stirred. "Bring the linen sheets from the loft," Eloise said. "The churchman will sleep in this bed, and Sir Blowett's sister and her women in the loft."
"Where am I to sleep?"
Agnes asked, wriggling out of Kivrin's arms. "We will sleep in the barn," Eloise said. "But you must wait till we have made up the beds, Agnes. Go and play." Agnes didn't have to be encouraged. She hopped off down the stairs, waving her arm to make her bell ring. Eloise handed Kivrin the bedding. "Take these to the loft, and bring the Miniver coverlid from my husband's carven chest." "How many days do you think the bishop's envoy and his men will stay?" Kivrin asked. "I know not," Eloise said, looking worried. "I pray not more than a fortnight, or we shall not have meat enough. See, you do not forget the good bolsters." A fortnight was more than enough, well past the rendezvous, and they certainly didn't look like they were going anywhere. When Kivrin climbed down from the loft with the sheets, the bishop's envoy was asleep in the high seat, snoring loudly, and the clerk had his feet on the table. The monk had one of Sir Blowett's waiting women backed into a corner and was playing with her kerchief. Garwin was nowhere to be seen. Kivrin took the sheets and coverlid to Eloise, then offered to take bedding out to the barn. "Agnes is very tired," she said. "I would put her to bed soon." Eloise nodded absently, pounding at one of the heavy bolsters, and Kivrin ran downstairs and out into the courtyard. Garwin was not in the stable nor the brewhouse. She lingered near the privy until two of the red-headed young men emerged, looked at her curiously, and then went on to the barn. Perhaps Garwin had gone off with Masery again, or joined the villagers' celebration on the green. He could hear the sound of laughter as she spread straw on the bare wooden floor of the loft. She laid the furs and quilts on the straw, and went down and out through the passageway to see if she could see him. The contempts had built a bonfire in front of the churchyard, and were standing around it warming their hands and drinking out of large horns. She could see the reddened faces of Maisery's father and the reeve in the firelight, but not Garwin. He was not in the courtyard either. Rosamond was standing by the gate, wrapped in her cloak. "What are you doing out here in the cold?" Kivrin asked. "I am awaiting my father," Rosamond said. "Garwin told me he expects him before day." "Have you seen Garwin?"
"Aye. He's in the stable."
Kivrin looked anxiously toward the stable. "It's too cold to wait out here. You must go in the house, and I'll tell Garwin to tell you when your father comes."
"Nay, I will wait here," Rosamond said. "He promised he would come to us for Christmas."
Her voice quavered a little. Kivrin held her lantern up. Rosamond wasn't crying, but her cheeks were red. Kivrin wondered what Sir Bloat had done now that had Rosamond hiding from him. Or perhaps it was the monk who had frightened her, or the drunken clerk. Kivrin took her arm. "You can wait as well in the kitchen, and it is warm there," she said. Rosamond nodded.
"My father promised he would come without fail."
"And do what?" Kivrin wondered. "Throw out the churchman? Call off Rosamond's engagement to Sir Bloat?"
"My father would never allow me to come to harm," she had told Kivrin.
But he was scarcely in a position to cancel the betrothal when the marriage settlement had already been signed to alienate Sir Bloat, who had many powerful friends. Kivrin took Rosamond into the kitchen and told Maisry to heat a cup of wine for her. "I'll go tell Garwin to come get you as soon as your father comes," she said, and went across to the stable. But Garwin wasn't there, or in the brewhouse. She went into the house wondering if Hermione had sent him on yet another of her errands. But Hermione was sitting beside the obviously unwillingly wakened envoy, talking determinedly to him, and Garwin was by the fire, surrounded by Sir Bloat's men, including the two who had come out of the privy. Sir Bloat sat on the near side of the hearth with his sister-in-law and Eloise. Kivrin sank down on the beggar's bench by the screens. There was no way to even get near him, let alone ask him about the drop.
"Give him to me," Agnes wailed.
She and the rest of the children were over by the stairs to the bower, and the little boys were passing Blackie among them, petting him and playing with his ears. Agnes must have gone out to the stable to fetch the puppy while Kivrin was out in the barn.
"He's my hound,"
Agnes said, grabbing for Blackie. The little boy wrenched the puppy away.
"Give him to me,"
Kivrin stood up.
"As I was riding through the woods, I came upon a maiden," Garwin said loudly. "She had been set upon by thieves and was sore wounded, her head cut open and bleeding grievously."
Kivrin hesitated, glancing towards Agnes, who was pounding on the little boy's arm and then sat down again.
"Fair maid," I said. "Who has done this fell thing?" Garwin said. "But she could not speak for her injuries."
Agnes had the puppy back and was clutching it to her. Kivrin should go rescue the poor thing, but she stayed where she was.
"Tell them where you found me,"
she willed Garwin.
"Tell them where in the woods."
I am your liegeman and will find these evil knaves, I said. But I fear to leave you in such sad plight,
he said, looking toward Eloise.
But she had recovered herself, and she begged me to go and find those who had harmed her.
Eloise stood up and walked to the door. She stood there for a moment looking anxious, and then came and sat back down.
No!
Agnes shrieked. One of Sir Blowett's red-headed nephews had Blackie now and was holding him above his head in one hand. If Kivrin didn't rescue it soon, they'd squeeze the poor dog to death, and there was no point in listening to any more of the rescue of the maiden in the wood, which was obviously intended not to tell what had happened, but to impress Eloise. She walked over to the children.
The robbers had not been long gone, Garwin said. And I found their trail with ease and followed it, spurring my steed after them.
Sir Blowett's nephew was dangling Blackie by his front legs, and the puppy was whimpering pathetically.
Kivrin!
Agnes cried, catching sight of her, and flung herself at Kivrin's legs. Sir Blowett's nephew immediately handed Kivrin the puppy and backed away, and the rest of the children scattered.
You rescued Blackie, Agnes said, reaching for him.
Kivrin shook her head. It is time to go to bed, she said.
I'm not tired,
Agnes said in a whine that was scarcely convincing. She rubbed her eyes. Blackie is tired, Kivrin said, squatting down beside Agnes. And he won't go to bed unless you will lie down with him. That argument seemed to interest her. And before she could find a flaw in it, Kivrin handed Blackie back to her, placing him in her arms like a baby and scooped them both up. Blackie would have you tell him a story, Kivrin said, starting for the door.
Soon I found myself in a place that I knew not, Garwin said. A dark forest.
Kivrin carried her charges outside and across the courtyard.
Blackie likes stories about cats, Agnes said, rocking the puppy gently in her arm.
You must tell him a story about a cat, then, Kivrin said. She took the puppy while Agnes climbed up the ladder to the loft. He was already asleep, worn out from all the handling. Kivrin laid him in the straw next to the pallet.
A wicked cat, Agnes said, grabbing him up again. I am not going to sleep. I'm only lying down with Blackie, so I need not take off my clothes.
No, you need not, Kivrin said, covering Agnes and Blackie with a heavy fur. It was too cold in the barn for undressing.
Blackie would fain wear my bell, she said, trying to put the ribbon over his head.
No, he wouldn't, Kivrin said. She confiscated the bell and spread another fur over them. Kivrin crawled in next to the little girl. Agnes pushed her small body against Kivrin.
Once there was a wicked cat, Agnes said, yawning. Her father told her not to go into the forest, but she heeded him not.
She fought valiantly against falling asleep, rubbing her eyes and making up adventures for the wicked cat, but the darkness and the warmth of the heavy fur finally overcame her. Kivrin continued to lie there, waiting till Agnes's breathing became light and steady, and then gently extricated Blackie from Agnes's grip and laid him in the straw. Agnes frowned in her sleep and reached for him, and Kivrin wrapped her arms around her. She should get up and go look for Garwin. The rendezvous was in less than a week. Agnes stirred and snuggled closer, her hair against Kivrin's cheek. And how will I leave you, Kivrin thought, and Rosamond, and Father Roche, and fell asleep. When she woke, it was nearly light, and Rosamond had crawled in beside Agnes. Kivrin left them sleeping and crept down from the loft and across the grey courtyard afraid she had missed the bell for mass. But Garwin was still holding forth by the fire, and the bishop's envoy was still sitting in the high seat listening to Lady Hermione. The monk was sitting in the corner with his arm around Maisry, but the clerk was nowhere to be seen. He must have passed out and been put to bed. The children must also have been put to bed, and some of the women had apparently gone up to the loft to rest. Kivrin didn't see Sir Blowett's sister or the sister-in-law from Dorset.
"Halt, knave," I cried, Garwin said, "for I would fight you in fair combat." Kivrin wondered if this was still the rescue or one of Sir Lancelot's adventures. It was impossible to tell. And if the purpose of it was to impress Eloise, it was to no avail. She wasn't in the hall. What was left of Garwin's audience didn't seem impressed either. Two of them were playing a desultory game of dice on the bench between them, and Sir Blurt was asleep, his chin on his massive chest. Kivrin obviously hadn't missed any opportunities to speak to Garwin by falling asleep. And from the look of things, there wouldn't be any for some time. She might as well have stayed in the loft with Agnes. She was going to have to make an opportunity. Waylay Garwin on his way to the privy, or catch up to him on the way to mass and whisper, "Meet me afterward in the stable." Churchmen didn't look like they'd leave unless the wine gave out, but it was risky to cut it too close. The men might take a notion to go hunting tomorrow, or the weather might change, and whether the bishop's envoy and his flunkies left or not, it was still only 5 days to the rendezvous. No, 4. It was already Christmas. "He aimed a savage blow," Garwin said, standing up to illustrate, "and had it driven down as earnestly as he fainted, my head would have been cloven in twain." "Lady Catherine," Hermione said. She had stood up and was beckoning to Kivrin. The bishop's envoy was looking interestedly at her, and her heart began to pound, wondering what mischief they had cooked up between them now. But before Kivrin could cross the hall, Hermione left him and came across to her, carrying a linen-wrapped bundle. "I would have you carry these to Father Roche for the mass," she said, folding the linen back so Kivrin could see the wax candles inside. "Bid him put these on the altar, and say to him to pinch not the flames from the candles, for it breaks the wick. Bid him prepare the church that the bishop's envoy may say the Christmas mass. I would have the church look like a place of the Lord, not a pigsty. And bid him put on a clean robe."
"So you get your proper mass after all,"
Kivrin thought, hurrying across the courtyard and along the passageway. "And you've got rid of me. All you need now is to get rid of Roche. Persuade the bishop's envoy to demote him, or take him to Bicester Abbey." There was no one on the green. The dying bonfire flickered palely in the grey light, and the snow that had melted around it was refreezing in icy puddles. The villagers must have gone to bed, and she wondered if Father Roche had too. But there was no smoke from his house and no answer to her knock on the door. She went along the path and in the side door of the church. It was still dark inside, and colder than it had been at midnight.
"Father Roche,"
Kivrin called softly, groping her way to the statue of St. Catherine. He didn't answer, but she could hear the murmur of his voice. He was behind the rude screen, kneeling in front of the altar.
"Guide those who have travelled far this night safely home, and protect them from danger and illness along the way," he said.
And his soft voice reminded her of the night in the sick room when she had been so ill steady and comforting through the flames. And of Mr. Dunworthy. She didn't call to him again, but stayed where she was, leaning against the icy statue and listening to his voice in the darkness.
Sir Blowett and his family came from Courcy to the mass and all their servants, he said, and Theodulf Freeman from Hennefeld. The snow stopped yestereve, and the skies showed clear for the night of Christ's holy birth.
He went on, in that matter-of-fact voice that sounded just like she did praying into the corder, the attendance tally for the mass and the weather report. Light was beginning to come in through the windows now, and she could see him through the filigreed rude screen, his robe threadbare and dirty around the hem, his face coarse and cruel-looking, in comparison to the aristocratic envoy, the thin-faced clerk.
This blessed night, as the mass ended, a messenger from the bishop came, and with him two priests, all three of great learning and goodness.
Roche prayed.
Don't be fooled by the gold and fancy clothes, Kivrin thought. You're worth 10 of them.
The bishop's envoy will say the Christmas mass, Hermione had said, and didn't seem to be troubled at all by the fact that he hadn't fasted or bothered to come to the church to prepare for the mass himself.
You're worth 50 of them, Kivrin thought.
100.
There is word from Oxenford of illness. Toward the Cotter fares better, though I bade him not come so far to the mass. Octreda was too weak to come to the mass. I took her soup, but she ate it not. Walther fell vomiting after the dancing from too much ale, and Geitha burned her hand upon the bonfire in plucking a brand from it. I shall not fear, though the last days come, the days of wrath, and the final judgment, for you have sent much help.
Much help? You wouldn't have any help if she stood here listening much longer. The sun was up now, and in the rose and gold light from the windows she could see the drippings down the sides of the candlesticks, the tarnish on their bases, a big blot of wax on the altar cloth. The day of wrath and the final judgment would be the right words for what would happen if the church looked like this when Hermione marched into mass. Father Roche, she said. Roche turned immediately and then tried to stand up, his legs obviously stiff with the cold. He looked startled, even frightened, and Kivrin said quickly, "It's Catherine," and moved forward into the light of one of the windows so he could see her. He crossed himself, still looking frightened, and she wondered if he had been half-dozing at his prayers and was still not awake. "Lady Hermione sent me with candles," she said, coming around the rude screen to him. "She bade me tell you to set them in the silver candlesticks on either side of the altar. She bade me tell you..." She stopped, ashamed to be delivering Hermione's edicts. "I have come to help you prepare the church for mass. What would you have me do? Shall I polish the candlesticks?" She held out the candles to him. He didn't take the candles or say anything, and she frowned, wondering if in her eagerness to protect him from Hermione's wrath, she had broken some rule. Women were not allowed to touch the elements or the vessels of the mass. Perhaps they weren't allowed to handle the candlesticks either. "Am I not allowed to help?" she asked. "Should I not have come into the chancel?" Roche seemed suddenly to come to himself.
"There is nowhere God's servants may not go," he said.
He took the candles from her and laid them on the altar.
"But such a one as you should not do such humble work."
"It is God's work," she said briskly. She took the half-burned candles out of the heavy branched candlestick. Wax had dripped down the sides. "We'll need some sand," she said, "and a knife to scrape the wax off." He went to get them immediately, and while he was gone, she hastily took the candles down from the rude screen and replaced them with tallow ones. He came in with the sand, a fistful of filthy rags, and a poor excuse for a knife. But it cut through wax, and Kivrin started in on the altar cloth, scraping at the spot of wax, worried that they might not have much time. The bishop's envoy hadn't looked in any hurry to heave himself out of the high seat and prepare for the mass, but who knew how long he could hold out against Hermione? "I don't have any time either," she thought, starting on the candlesticks. She had told herself there was plenty of time, but she had spent the entire night actively pursuing Garwin and hadn't even got close to him. And tomorrow he might decide to go hunting, or rescuing fair maidens. Or the bishop's envoy and his flunkies might drink up all the wine and set off in search of more, dragging her with them. "There is nowhere God's servants may not go," Roche had said. "Except to the drop," she thought. "Except home." She scrubbed viciously with the wet sand at some wax embedded in the rim of the candlestick, and a piece flew off and hit the candle Roche was scraping. "I'm sorry," she said. "Lady Hermione," and then stopped. There was no point in telling him she was being sent away. If he tried to intercede for her with Lady Hermione, it would only make it worse, and she didn't want him shipped off to Osney for trying to help her. He was waiting for her to finish her sentence. "Lady Hermione bade me tell you the bishop's envoy will say the Christmas Mass," she said.
"It will be a blessing to hear such holiness on the birthday of Christ Jesus," he said, setting down the polished chalice.
The birthday of Christ Jesus. She tried to envision St. Mary the Virgin's, as it would look this morning, the music and the warmth, the laser candles glittering in the stainless steel candlesticks. But it was like something she had only imagined, dim and unreal. She stood the candlesticks on either side of the altar. They shone dully in the multicolored light of the windows. She set three of Hermione's candles in them and moved the left one a little closer to the altar, so they were even. There was nothing she could do about Roche's robe, which Hermione knew full well was the only one he had. He had got wet sand on his sleeve, and she wiped it off with her hand. "I must go wake Agnes and Rosamond for the mass," she said, brushing at the front of his robe, and then went on almost without meaning to. "Lady Hermione has asked the bishop's envoy to take me with them to the nunnery at Godstow."
"God has sent you to this place to help us," he said. "He will not let you be taken from it."
"I wish I could believe you," Kivrin thought, going back across the green. There was still no sign of life, though smoke was coming from a couple of the roofs, and the cow had been turned out. It was nibbling the grass near the bonfire where the snow had melted. "Perhaps they're all asleep, and I can wake Garwin and ask him where the drop is," she thought, and saw Rosamond and Agnes coming toward her. They looked considerably the worse for wear. Rosamond's leaf-green velvet dress was covered with wisps of straw and hay dust, and Agnes had it in her hair. She broke free of Rosamond as soon as she saw Kivrin and ran up to her. "You're supposed to be asleep," Kivrin said, brushing straw from her red kirtle.
"Some men came," Agnes said. "They wakened us."
Kivrin looked inquiringly at Rosamond. "Has your father come?"
"Nay," she said. "I know not who they are. I think they must be servants of the bishop's envoy."
They were. There were four of them, monks, though not of the class of the Cistercian monk, and 2 laden donkeys, and they had obviously only now caught up with their master. They unloaded 2 large chests while Kibben and the girls watched, several Wadmal bags, and an enormous wine cask.
"They must be planning to stay a long while," Agnes said.
"Yes," Kibben said. "God has sent you to this place. He will not let you be taken from it."
"Come," she said cheerfully. "I will comb your hair." She took Agnes inside and cleaned her up. The short nap hadn't improved Agnes's disposition, and she refused to stand still while Kibben combed her hair. It took her till mass to get all the straw and most of the tangles out, and Agnes continued to whine the whole way to the church. There had apparently been vestments as well as wine in the envoy's luggage. The bishop's envoy wore a black velvet chasuble over his dazzlingly white vestments, and the monk was resplendent in yards of samite and gilt embroidery. The clerk was nowhere to be seen, and neither was Father Roche, probably exiled because of his dirty robe. Kibben looked toward the back of the church, hoping he'd been allowed to witness all this holiness. But she couldn't see him among the villagers. They looked somewhat the worse for wear, too, and some of them were obviously badly hungover. As was the bishop's envoy. He rattled through the words of the mass tonelessly and in an accent Kibben could scarcely understand. It bore no resemblance to Father Roche's Latin, nor to what Latimer and the priest at Holy Reformed had taught her. The vowels were all wrong, and the C in Excelsis was almost a Z. She thought of Latimer drilling her on the long vowels, of Holy Reform's priest insisting on C as in eggshell, on the true Latin. And it was the true Latin, she thought. "I will not leave you," he had said. He had said, "Be not afraid." And I understood him. As the mass progressed, the envoy chanted faster and faster, as if he were anxious to be done with it. Lady Hermione didn't seem to notice. She looked smugly serene in the knowledge of doing good, and nodded approvingly at the sermon, which seemed to be about forsaking worldly things. As they were filing out, though, she stopped at the door of the church and looked toward the bell tower, her lips pursed in disapproval. "Now what?" Kibben thought. "A mote of dust on the bell?"
"Saw you how the church looked, Lady Evaldi?" Hermione said angrily to Sir Blowett's sister over the sound of the bell. "He had set no candles in the chancel windows, but only cressets, as a peasant uses." She stopped. "I must stay behind to speak to him of this. He has disgraced our house before the bishop." She marched off toward the bell tower, her face set with righteous anger. And if he had set candles in the windows, Kibben thought, they would have been the wrong kind, or in the wrong place, or he would have blown them out incorrectly. She wished there was some way to warn him. But Hermione was already halfway to the tower, and Agnes was tugging insistently on Kibben's hand.
"I'm tired," she said. "I would go to bed."
Kibben took Agnes to the barn, dodging among the villagers who were starting in on a second round of merrymaking. Fresh wood had been thrown on the bonfire, and several of the young women had joined hands and were dancing around it. Agnes lay down willingly in the loft, but she was up again before Kibben made it into the house, trotting across the courtyard after her.
"Agnes," Kibben said sternly, her hands on her hips, "what are you doing up? You said you were tired."
"Blackie is ill."
"Ill?" Kibben said.
"What's wrong with him?"
"He is ill,"
Agnes repeated.
She took hold of Kivrin's hand and led her back to the barn and up to the loft. Blackie lay in the straw, a lifeless bundle. "Will you make him a poultice?"
Kivrin picked the puppy up and laid him back down gingerly. He was already stiff.
"Oh, Agnes, I'm afraid he's dead."
Agnes squatted down and looked at him interestedly.
"Grandmother's chaplain died," she said. "Had Blackie a fever?"
Blackie had too much handling, Kivrin thought. He had been passed from hand to hand, squeezed, trodden on, half-choked, killed with kindness. And on Christmas. Though Agnes didn't seem particularly upset.
"Will there be a funeral?"
she asked, putting out a tentative finger to Blackie's ear.
"No," Kivrin thought.
There hadn't been any shoebox burials in the Middle Ages. The contempts had disposed of dead animals by tossing them into the underbrush, by dumping them in a stream.
"We will bury him in the woods," she said,
though she had no idea how they would manage that with the ground frozen.
"Under a tree."
For the first time, Agnes looked unhappy.
"Father Roche must bury Blackie in the churchyard," she said.
Father Roche would do nearly anything for Agnes, but Kivrin couldn't imagine him agreeing to Christian burial for an animal. The idea of pets being creatures with souls hadn't become popular until the 19th century, and even the Victorians hadn't demanded Christian burial for their dogs and cats.
"I will say the prayers for the dead," Kivrin said. "Father Roche must bury him in the churchyard," Agnes said, her face puckering. "And then he must ring the bell."
"We cannot bury him till after Christmas," Kivrin said hastily. "After Christmas, I will ask Father Roche what to do." She wondered what she should do with the body for now. She couldn't leave him lying there where the girls slept.
"Come, we will take Blackie below," she said.
She picked up the puppy, trying not to grimace, and took him down the ladder. She looked around for a box or a bag to put Blackie in, but she couldn't find anything. She finally laid him in a corner behind a scythe and had Agnes bring handfuls of straw to cover him with. Agnes flung the straw on him.
"If Father Roche does not ring the bell for Blackie, he will not go to heaven," she said, and burst into tears.
It took Kivrin half an hour to calm her down again. She rocked her in her arms, wiping her streaked face and saying, "Shh, shh." She could hear noise from the courtyard. She wondered if the Christmas merrymaking had moved into the courtyard, or if the men were going hunting. She could hear the whinny of horses.
"Let's go see what's happening in the courtyard," she said.
"Perhaps your father is here." Agnes sat up, wiping her nose.
"I would tell him of Blackie," she said, and got off Kivrin's lap.
They went outside. The courtyard was full of people and horses.
"What are they doing?" Agnes asked.
"I don't know," Kivrin said. But it was all too clear what they were doing. Cobb was leading the envoy's white stallion out of the stable, and the servants were carrying out the bags and boxes they had carried in early this morning. Lady Eloise stood at the door looking anxiously into the courtyard.
"Are they leaving?" Agnes asked.
"No," Kivrin said. "No, they can't be leaving. I don't know where the drop is." The monk came out, dressed in his white habit and his cloak. Cobb went back into the stable and came out again, leading the mare Kivrin had ridden when they went to find the holly and carrying a saddle.
"They are leaving," Agnes said.
I know, Kivrin said. I can see that they are. Chapter 23 Kivrin grabbed Agnes's hand and started back to the safety of the barn. She must hide until they were gone.
Where are we going? Agnes asked.
Kivrin darted around two of Sir Bluett's servants carrying a chest. To the loft. Agnes stopped cold.
I do not wish to lie down, she wailed. I'm not tired. Lady Catherine,
someone called from across the courtyard. Kivrin scooped Agnes up and started rapidly for the barn.
I'm not tired, Agnes shrieked. I am not.
Rosamond ran up beside her.
Lady Catherine, did you not hear me?
Mother wants you. The bishop's envoy is leaving. She took hold of Kivrin's arm and turned her back toward the house. Eloise was still standing in the door watching them now, and the bishop's envoy had come out and was standing beside her in his red cloak. Kivrin couldn't see Imani anywhere. She was probably inside, packing Kivrin's clothes.
The bishop's envoy has urgent business at the priory at Vernissester, Rosamond said, leading Kivrin to the house. And Sir Bluett goes with them.
She smiled happily at Kivrin.
Sir Bluett says he will accompany them to Courcy, that they may lie there tonight, and arrive in Vernissester tomorrow.
Vernissester. Bicester. At least it wasn't Godstow. But Godstow was along the way.
What business? I know not, Rosamond said, as if it were unimportant.
And Kivrin supposed for her it was. Sir Bluett was leaving, and that was all that mattered. Rosamond plunged happily through the melee of servants and baggage and horses toward her mother. The bishop's envoy was speaking to one of his servants, and Eloise was watching him, frowning. Neither of them would see her if she turned and walked rapidly back behind the open doors of the stable. But Rosamond still had hold of her sleeve, and was pulling her forward.
Rosamond, I must go back to the barn. I have left my cloak, she began. Mother!
Agnes cried and ran toward Eloise and nearly into one of the horses. It whinnied and tossed its head, and a servant dived for its bridle.
Agnes!
Rosamond shouted and let go of Kivrin's sleeve, but it was too late. Eloise and the bishop's envoy had already seen them and started over to them.
You must not run among the horses,
Eloise said, catching Agnes against her.
My hound is dead!
Agnes said.
That is no reason to run,
Eloise said, and Kivrin knew she hadn't even heard her. Eloise turned back to the bishop's envoy.
Tell your husband we are grateful for the loan of your horses, that ours may be rested for the journey to Vernissester,
he said, and he sounded distracted too.
I will send them from Courcy with a servant.
Would you see my hound?
Agnes said, tugging on her mother's skirt.
Hush, Eloise said.
My clerk does not ride with us this afternoon,
he said.
I fear he made too merry yester-eve and feels now the pains of too much drink. I beg your indulgence, good lady, that he may stay and follow when he is recovered.
Of course he may stay, Eloise said. Is there aught we can do to help him? My husband's mother...
Nay, leave him be. There is naught can help an aching head save sleep. He will be well by evening,
he said, looking like he had made too merry himself. He seemed nervous, inattentive, as if he had a splitting headache, and his aristocratic face was grey in the bright morning light. He shivered and pulled his cloak around him.
This ends side one of cassette 12. Please turn the cassette over and start side two at the same point.